puis c'est vrai la vie, à vie, vie. For which we shall receive a presentation from the department. And I guess, Mr. Arno, you're going to need the presentation. Okay. Without then wasting any time, can we then get to the presentation? Hello, Eventu?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I know it's the first meeting of the committee for this year. But the committee also did some good work last year. There was another meeting where we raised the issue of the minutes when they stand packed for a long time. We end up dealing with them. In one meeting, minutes of maybe about 3 meetings, it also affects the systematic processing of issues. It might happen there are other outstanding issues we would like to pick from those minutes. So I propose that we have that as the second item before we close the meeting.
No, thank you very much, Honorable View. They are here. Maybe I didn't, but I was not loud on that on the table right here. But they are here. They are here. We will deal with them after the receiving and concluding the briefing. Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to the honourable members, and thanks for the opportunity of allowing us to make the presentation this morning. Very briefly, we're dealing with the Civil Aviation Bill, B103B 2008, and to open up, I just want to provide some background for the members' understanding of this bill. South Africa needs to comply in terms of our international air services agreements and compliance to the International Civil Aviation Organization. There's various standards and recommended practices that the country needs to make sure that it adapts and stands up to. Hence, our legislation is one of the key elements that we need to focus on in terms of being compliant to the international arena when it comes to aviation. The second issue is the national and international importance of compliance to ICAO. We have air traffic that comes from the country, as well as we have traffic from South Africa that goes abroad, and we have a domestic civil aviation industry as such. And there has to be a very firm basis on which the industry operates, and that originates from the legislation, which we will be discussing in front of us. The third issue is, in 2007, South Africa underwent two audits, one being the International Civil Aviation Organization audit, and the other being the assessment by the Federal Aviation Administration of the United States. Suffice to say, we did not do remarkably well in the audits, and one of the main issues that was flagged was the legislation. And we had put into our corrective action plan that we would have the legislation overhauled and promulgated in 2009. We did do interim corrective measures, which allowed us to retain our Category 1 status. However, retaining the status still hinges on the fact that we have outstanding piece of legislation that needs to go through. The legislation also makes recommendations to improve civil aviation in South Africa, as well as the whole package is a consolidation of various pieces of legislation, which is the Aviation Act of 1962, which is a very technical act, and as you can see, 1962 is a long time away from where we are. Civil Aviation Offences Act of 1972, and post-1972, there's a number of issues that came up in terms of civil aviation offences, terrorism, security threats, etc. And the South African Civil Aviation Authority Act of 1998. In terms of the audits that were performed in 2007, there was an understanding by both ICAO and the Federal Aviation Administration that these various pieces of legislation provide for a conflicting flow of reporting lines, and as such, it was too muddy to understand, and you could not have one accountable body that reported to a political head in terms of the security oversight for SCAR. Now, if you can proceed directly to the bill, the bill, Section 1, basically provides the definitions, and it's self-explanatory, so I'm not going to the various definitions on which it. Section 2 deals with the application of the Act, that is the Act Convention and Transit Agreement, which applies to every aircraft, aerodrome, air navigation facility, airport, operator, passenger, anyone boarding an aircraft or entering an aerodrome and owners of aircraft. Also applies to every person employed at an aerodrome or air navigation facility or airport. All foreign registered aircraft and personnel of such aircraft operating in the country or over our territorial waters, as well as all South African aircraft and personnel in or outside South Africa. The Act, Convention, and Transit Agreement do not apply to aircraft, airports, heliports, or heli-stops belonging to South African National Defence Force and South African Police Services, or to aircraft or airports in its use exclusively by the Defence Force and the Police Services, or aircraft used by Customs Services. And this is basically standard throughout the world, because we're dealing with civil aviation and not dealing with aviation which affects defence operations as such, policing operations. Section 3 grants power to carry out and apply the Convention and Transit Agreement. The Minister, in consultation with the Civil Aviation Authority, may issue proclamations for carrying out the Convention and Transit Agreement. He may do all things necessary to ratify amendments to the Convention or the Transit Agreement from time to time. Section 4, the bill deals with the function of the Ministry in connection with the Act, Convention and Transit Agreement. The Minister of Transport is responsible for carrying out the Act, Convention and Transit Agreement. Every person appointed under or concerned with carrying out of the Act, excluding Defence Force Police Services, must perform functions in the manner which is protected in this Act. And the Minister must designate the South African Civil Aviation Authority as the appropriate authority for the purposes of carrying out the functions of the Act. Section 5 is basically the Convention and Transit Agreement have, subject to this Act, a force of law in the country. Section 6 deals with the acquisition of land and rights in connection licensed airports. The Minister may acquire land and interest in land adjoining or adjacent to any aerodrome. The Minister may acquire land and interest in land for the purpose of erection and maintenance of aids to safety in air navigation. Section 6. Aerodrome and airport is, airport is the overarching definition. An aerodrome will be a landing strip. Basic infrastructure, like if it's a small aircraft, they just land in reference to a larger airport, like Continental, for example, might be a small airport if somehow it's custom, then considered to be an aerodrome.
An airport.
But that's full air navigation infrastructure, building, operation. Yeah, Section 7 deals with permission to use land held under any recognition permission for taking of mine materialization. Subject to relevant legislation, the Minister of Minerals and Energy may permit the use of specific land for the establishment of airports and other related functions. Section 8 deals with the trespass nuisance responsibility for damage or loss by registered owners and operators of aircraft. No action lies in respect of trespass and nuisance by reason only of the flight of aircraft over any property at a height is reasonable in compliance with Act, Convention and Transit Agreement. Damage or loss caused by aircraft flight, any person with such flight or article falling from aircraft may be recovered from the registered owner of the aircraft. And the registered owner or operator of aircraft must have insurance relating to damage or loss caused by aircraft. And given the type of industry, aircraft flies over people's property. So when accidents do happen, this is the relevant section that applies in terms of the insurance aspect and the owner's rights of the aircraft. This is a new item in terms of when we overhaul the legislation, we have to make inclusion of new items which were found not to be available when we had the audit. The International Civil Aviation Organization has various standard recommended practices as well as various annexes to the convention. And one of the annexes, Annex 13, calls for an independent aviation safety investigation board. Now, it must be fully independent in that it must not report to the Civil Aviation Authority or to any airline, but standalone body, take control of all aircraft investigation when an accident or incident happens, and report that, deliver a report which goes to the minister as well as which makes recommendations for corrective action. The fundamental issue with this aviation safety investigation board is that the investigation is conducted in the premise that there will be a no blame apportionment. So, when an accident or incident happens, you would expect that air crew or technical staff or whoever may be involved in the operation would come voluntarily and give information without a fear of prosecution as such. Because the nature of this type of investigation is to find exactly what has happened and to prevent a reoccurrence. Now, the application of the chapter 69 applies to aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents in or over the Republic and any place that is under the Republic's air traffic control, in or over any place in the Republic is requested to investigate the aircraft accident or incident, or the aircraft incident involves an aircraft that is operated by a person in possession of a South African aviation authorization or any other aviation approval document. The establishment and objectives of the ASIP being the acronym for Aviation Safety Investigation Board, the juristic person to advance aviation transportation safety by independent investigation, finding the causes and contributing factors, identifying safety deficiencies, making recommendations to eliminate or reduce safety deficiencies, reporting publicly on investigations and findings, promoting compliance with and investigating aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents in compliance with Annex 13 to this convention. There is no apportionment of blame or liability and does not determine civil or criminal liability. The sole objective of ASIP is accident prevention. ASIP may, to achieve its objective or if requested by the Minister, investigate aircraft accidents or aircraft incidents. No department, excluding Department of Defense, may commence an investigation if the aircraft accident and aircraft incident being investigated by the ASIP. That department informs that the aircraft accident aircraft incident is proposed to be investigated by the ASIP. The department may continue to investigate for purposes other than for determining causes or contributing factors. The South African Police Services may investigate for any purpose for which it is empowered to do so. The ASIP must not inquire into any aircraft accident and aircraft incident where a prosecution, interest, or inquiry has been established by the Minister which was instituted or completed before commencement of the attack. While we're on this ASIP slide, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in terms of prosecution purposes, the Civil Aviation Authority can conduct a covered investigation. So if there is criminal liability, it's not that people get off the hook. The purpose of ASIP is for preventing a reoccurrence of an accident, hence the investigation. And that is exactly what the International Civil Aviation Organization sets up to achieve in terms of standing globally. Coordination of investigation, where a department, excluding Department of Defense, investigates an aircraft accident or incident, the ASIP and such department must coordinate activities. Requirements and interests of the ASIP take precedence over that of a department in case of a conflict of interest. When an aircraft accident or incident is investigated by the ASIP, the Department of Defense or staff or a visiting force must take reasonable steps to ensure coordination. Compatible procedures and practices. ASIP must ensure that investigation procedures and practices are compatible with international agreements, conventions, and judicial inquest in terms of the Inquest Act. Appointment of members, filling of vacancies in terms of office is governed in Section 15. The Action Taking Patient Board consists of not more than 5 members appointed by the Minister. One must be a full-time member and chairperson. Chairperson is appointed for a term of 3 years and is eligible for appointment of one further term only. Member of ASIP is appointed for a term not exceeding 3 years and is eligible for reappointment. And the member must be a South African citizen permanently resident in the Republic. Section 16 deals with the disqualification and removal of the members. A person may not be appointed as a member of ASIP, not a permanent resident, is a public servant, or holds a position remuneration by the state, an office bearer or an employer of a party, having a direct interest in the aviation industry, have been declared mentally ill or disordered, is an unrehabilitated insolvent, has at any time been convicted or at any time been removed from office of trust on account of misconduct. Section 17 covers the performance management system for ASIP. The Minister must establish a performance management system to monitor and evaluate the performance of the members of ASIP. Performance management system must set key performance indicators, set measurable performance targets, and set a procedure to measure and review performance at least once a year. Section 18 deals with remuneration, fees and expenses of ASIP. Members of ASIP remuneration allowances that are determined by the Minister as determined in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The members are entitled to reasonable travel and living expenses in the course of their duties as may be prescribed from time to time. The duties of the chairperson and meetings in the forum of ASIP are from Section 19 to 21. The chairperson month, three members of council form a quorum. Section 22-24 covers expenditure, the CFMA, and the conflict of interest. Expenditure in connection with the execution of assets must be paid out of monies appropriate by funding such purposes. Assets must comply with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. And members of assets may not directly or indirectly as owner, director, officer, partner, or otherwise be engaged in an aviation undertaking of business or have an interest in an aviation undertaking of business or own interest, financial or otherwise, in the manufacture of aviation plants or equipment. And this is expressed quite clearly. The independence of this board has to be absolute. Duties of members of ESSA of Section 25, they may make rules regarding conduct of business, establish policies with regard to classes of aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents to be investigated, review reports submitted to them by the Director of Investigation, determine the accident investigation board's findings as to the causes and contributing factors of aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents, identify any safety deficiencies and evidence by the incident accident, and make recommendations as they consider appropriate. Section 26 deals with appointment of staff for the Accident Safety Investigation Board. The Accident Safety Investigation Board must, at its first meeting or as soon as practical thereafter, after consultation, the Minister appoint a Director of Investigation, other investigations and such staff as are necessary for the proper conduct of the work of the ESSA. The Chairperson of ESSA is responsible for the management of an administration control over the staff appointed. Agreement between ESSA and the Director. ESSA and the Director may enter into agreements with regard to the secondment of staff of the Director to ESSA for the purposes of rendering any assistance during any investigation, any other matter relating to incidental to the investigation of aircraft incidents and aircraft accidents by ESSA. When entering into such agreements, the parties must avoid a conflict of interest, and ESSA must make all efforts to enter into agreements with ministers responsible for departments, providing for the coordination of activities between the ESSA and the departments with respect to aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents. Section 28 deals with the remuneration of staff of ESSA. An appointed member of the staff of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board receives such remuneration allowances as may be determined by the Minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Different scales of remuneration allowances, benefits, or privileges may be determined under Subsection 1 in respect of different members of staff of the Accident Investigation Board. Under the Chair, there's a reason for this thought. We're dealing with highly, highly technical people that have probably 4 sites on their shoulders and over 15,000 site hours, and they're very rare to come by. So the global demand is very high and the supply is very low. So the attraction in terms of remuneration plays a fundamental role in terms of making sure that you have a fully competent staff supporting effort as such. So hence, there's going to be different scales of remuneration. You can't have a standard scale applicable to the staffing component of effort. Independent and impartiality of effort is covered in Section 29. Member staff, experts, advisors, and accredited representatives of ESSA must serve impartially and independently and exercise and carry out and perform their powers, duties, and functions in good faith and without fear, favor, bias, or prejudice, subject only to this act and convention. ESSA must function without any political or commercial interference. Section 50 covers the functions of this Aviation Safety Board. You must investigate, as I said, aircraft accidents, aircraft incident compliance with annex 13 to the convention, advise on safety recommendations prior to the completion of any investigation, oversee and control the performance of functions and activities of persons appointed by it, submit final reports to the minister within 3 months of completion of an investigation, submit the final report to all recipient states in compliance with annex 13 to the convention regarding aircraft accidents or aircraft incidents investigated by the board, monitors the implementation of safety recommendations as issued by other contracting boards. Powers of ESSA when investigators are covered in Section 51, Case 2-3. Obviously, they're going to investigate aircraft accidents, aircraft incidents. They'll determine its own staff establishment having regard to funds. They'll make rules for internal procedures for the investigation. Delegate the investigation of aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents to other contracting states. Establish an aircraft incident reporting system. Institute to defend any legal action, summons any examined witnesses under oath, summons any person to give evidence. Powers of ESSA investigation is continued in Section 3. The Director of Investigation has exclusive authority to direct the conduct of investigation on behalf of the ESSA. investigators have unrestricted access to aircraft involving an accident or incident, as well as to all documents which may be necessary for the investigation. They'll compile reports in connection with investigation. They'll obtain information from any person summoned and examine witnesses under oath. They will have unrestricted access to and control over all relevant evidence. Require a person to submit a medical examination. May require a physician, if so authorized by a person, to provide information, and may cause an autopsy to be carried out. Search and seizure by investigators covered in Section 34. Investigators may only, in the execution of Section 34, search and seize any property or item, enter and search a place for any item, and secure the safekeeping of the item seized. One may ask why, when we have an aircraft accident, this is necessary. You must bear in mind that there are maintenance organizations that maintain aircraft, and very much the accident investigation encompasses investigating the maintenance organization as such. And if the maintenance organization wants to destroy evidence, it's absolutely important that investigators get access to the evidence before it's destroyed. Powers to test items seized, return thereof certificate, public inquiry are covered in Section 35 to 38. The investigator may cause tests, including the destruction of an item, to be conducted. Owner of the item may be present at testing of item. Item seized must be returned to the owner or person from whom it was seized as soon as possible. Owner or person from whom item was seized may apply to court to have item returned. Public inquiry held may be necessary, and a certificate of appointment may be requested. Now, when you talk about destruction item, we're dealing with aircraft and we're dealing with various components. It is very necessary an aircraft may crash at this very point here, and a component may be about 2 kilometers away as a result of the crash. It's part of the normal investigation process to go and do meteorological studies and to test certain items to destruction to see exactly what was the cause of the incident as such. Notification of department of occurrence of aircraft accident, the aircraft incident is covered in Section 39. When a department is notified of an aircraft accident or aircraft incident, that department must provide the SF with full particulars thereof and advise the SF of any investigation it plans to conduct. Now, when you talk about department, let's just talk about department transport. It could be department of agriculture that has an agricultural aircraft that's therefore involved in an accident in this section. Notification of a minister having interest in an aircraft accident, aircraft incident. When an SF is notified of an aircraft accident or incident, must provide particulars thereof to any minister responsible for a department having an interest, advise the minister of the department of any investigation it plans to conduct. Attendance and removal of observers, covering Section 41. Subject to conditions provided by SF, a person may attend as an observer in an investigation. Such person may be removed as observer from an investigation if the observer has a conflict of interest that impedes the conduct of the investigation. Report on completion of investigation and manner of dealing with representations, rights of the affected parties are covered from Section 42 to 43. On completion of investigation, the board must prepare and make available to the public a report on its findings indicating safety deficiencies. Before making public such report, a copy of the draft report will be sent to each minister and person who has a direct interest in the findings, and must give that minister or person the opportunity to make a presentation within no less than 60 days. An interim report must be provided upon request by a minister of a department having interest in the investigation. Representations received must be considered before preparing a final report. Representation may be used by SF if considered necessary in the interest of aviation safety. Notification of finding minister's right to response is covered in Section 44 and 45. The board during investigation must notify a minister having interest in the findings that the matter requires urgent attention, and completion of investigation notify a minister or a person who has interest in the findings of any safety deficiencies together with recommendations. A minister who is notified of the findings of SF must within 90 days advise SF of any proposed action to be taken in response to findings and recommendations, or provide reasons, written reasons to the SF if no action will be taken. Delegation of powers, Section 46. SF may delegate powers or duties except powers to make rules and recommendations. We now move on to onboard recording, which is covered in Section 47 to 53. The contents of an onboard recording is privileged. However, onboard recording that relates to aircraft accident or aircraft incident must be released to an investigator. Now, when we talk about onboard recording, very commonly one would hear in terms of aviation coverage and television about the black box. This is is what we're talking about, where the pilot's communication with air traffic control or internal with his co-pilot is captured on recording as such. SM will not communicate or permanently communicate any portion of an onboard recording that is unrelated to the cause of contributing factors. Court or judicial inquest may order evidence relating to onboard recording to be given if in public interest or if proper administration of justice outweighs privilege attached to such recording. Communication records and statements of change, Section 54-8. Communication records will not be used against a person in any legal or disciplinary proceeding. Statements will not be used against a person who made it in any legal or disciplinary proceeding except in a prosecution for perjury. Court or inquest may require evidence to be given relating to a statement in public interest or proper administration of justice or based on the statement. Reporting of accident in aircraft incidents, covered by 59-61, SM may make rule for mandatory or voluntary reporting of aircraft accidents or aircraft incidents. Identity of person who makes a report to SM may be protected. Report under voluntary system may not be used against the person who made the report in any legal or disciplinary proceedings. Appearance and opinion of investigators, covered from 1662 to 1663. Investigators not competent or comparable to appear as witness except before a judicial inquest and is ordered by a court. Opinion of investigators not admissible in evidence in legal, disciplinary, or other proceedings. Section 64 deals with rules. Assets may subject to approval must make rules prescribing the manner in which to exercise the powers, duties, and functions, regulating and keeping of records, regarding the rules and procedures for public inquiries. Offences and evidence, Section 55-56. Any person without lawful excuse to resist or obstruct a member of act of investigation or knowingly gives false or misleading information is guilty of an offence. No person may refuse or fail to produce information to an investigator. No person may refuse to submit a medical examination but such information remains privileged. The last point we know is normally contentious, however, in terms of the industry and international compliance, it's part of the job that air crew will go for medical examination every 6 months, that's a commercial pilot. So it's not that they're going to be forced to do this, it's the normal procedures they must go for medical examination. So when an accident happens, and by example, let's say the pilot had a fit, or we had a blood pressure problem, and that caused aircraft to go into a crash, one needs to know why the aircraft went into a crash. Also, when you test the medical condition of a pilot in terms of the reaction to the situation in hand, one can establish that through medical examination. So if one looks at previous reports of aircraft accidents globally, you'll find that this is pretty much the norm in the industry. Section 67 and 68 deal with transitional arrangements and liability. A matter that has been instigated, but a report has not been made by the CAA when the act comes into force. Shall an act come into force be taken up and continued by the Accident Safety Investigation Board? Members of SS appointed staff, accredited representatives, expert advisor not personally liable by virtue of any report or finding made in good faith. Commission and Board of Inquiry, Section 69-70. In the event of an aircraft accident, an aircraft incident arising out of or in the course of air navigation occurring in or over the Republic or territorial waters thereof, the President may appoint a commission of inquiry in terms of Section 84 QF of the Constitution to conduct an investigation into the accident and report to him or her thereon. The Minister may appoint a board of inquiry to counter any action contemplated in Section 143 of this bill. Section 143 deals with security issues. So a Minister may put into a board of inquiry if there was a security breach at an airport or within the aviation infrastructure of the country. Finally, exactly what contributes to the state action thereof. We now move on, may pause on the chairman. If there's any question there, I can take it now, or should this proceed?
Honourable Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Professor. The first one is with regard to the, what we call it, the long title. Because there you speak about the establishment of an independent aviation investigation board. When is it supposed to, as you call it, as you put to the state, aviation investigation board, in the long term? But then the second one is with regard to some of the definitions there. commercial, where do we put, in terms of definition, private aircraft? Because in most instances, it's those category of aircraft which have got a lot of accidents rather than your commercial, which will be, as they accept, with the exception of Nationwide, which decided to feature the engine at some point. But mostly it's private aircraft which are involved in the accident. And the last one, Chair, just for interest sake, because we need also to look into how to also prevent this accident. In roads, you speak about the road safety belts. Do we have a situation where the department checks airworthy aircraft before it takes off so that you don't only come after the effect when it is, you know, kind of crash landed? And somewhere in section 78, subsection 6, if you speak about the order which is made by the minister, only available at the head office. At times, these accidents happen and they affect to residential areas far from the head office. You mean people around those areas, how do they access some of these orders and so on? Thank you.
Any other questions from
members
of the committee?
Only one to the new look.
Chairperson, of course, more than a handful of questions. The first one relates to the issue of establishing the board. I don't want to get the clarity. At the present moment, since we are now going to establish this board. The second question is related on section 13, after the coordination of the investigation. When you are saying the investigation can also include the visiting force, my worry is that also on section 15 you are saying the assets must be only a permanent resident in the country of South Africa. And the question is that why should we include people who are just visiting our country to be part of the investigation? And what would be the terms of reference in including those people? And also, I think that one also relates to section 16 on bullet point number one, that not a okay, that you can't appoint a member who is not a permanent resident, but I'm really worried about the visiting force that should be included in the investigation, the incident or whatever. Probably that has happened in or over South Africa. Except if you are saying, if you talk about Cuba, it's outside of South Africa. And also the issue of saying the board must be independent. It must have its independence. I think here the department is establishing this particular board, probably to assist and advise the minister when they are in the incident that has happened within the borders of this country. And okay, the other one relates to the remuneration of staff. Why should we put it on the legislation rather than to put that on regulation? Because usually, I don't think that in many cases they used to put the remuneration of staff members in legislation. Then, because if you put it now, it means whenever there should be an increment, then you have to amend the legislation. I But the way we are talking about this aspect, the children were establishing an investigation unit that is really independent. And from our own experience on what has happened on the other security or investigating security to overstep certain lines, I don't know how I'm going to control this. And also, at the same time, on the powers of accident investigator, but under section 323, you are saying there must be an exclusive authority to the direct conduct of investigation on behalf of the asset. Here we are establishing the board, but at the same time we are saying the board must also establish its own investing directorate. Can I get the clarity on that one? And on your slide 40, that deals with section 44 and 45. Here you are saying the minister must be notified on the findings of the asset within 90 days. And then at the same time, you are saying the minister must provide the written reason to the asset if no action must be taken. Now, my question is, who should decide about the action plan? Yes, it was my understanding that the asset should make a recommendation to the minister, not the minister to give the reasons why there will be no action taken against whoever. Because my understanding is that the very same asset at the same time has to advise the relevant minister about what should be taken. And in terms of rules, you see, section 64. The government also took a charge. Who should prescribe the manner in which asset should act? Because my understanding, I'm asking this question just as a ordinary person, maybe does not understand how these boards are functioning. Because my understanding is that if the board is established to do the work on behalf of the department, the relevant department through regulation must prescribe the manner in which that particular board must work, rather than to give the board to say you have to prescribe your own ways on which you are going to deal with it. Whatever function you have to do. That is my question. I will look for the answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Institute legal action. Now, maybe if you can get clarity on that, because once you institute my limited legal understanding would tell me that you are already approaching your place and you want to test your allegation in a court of law. And by virtue of doing that, you are approaching your place. How do you balance to, on the one hand, you don't approach your place, but at the same time, you can institute legal action against an individual, whatever comes from the court. And then the other one is on slide 19. There are 7 bullets again from the bottom. It says that under disqualification and removal of members of article section 15. Your 7 bullets from the bottom says the person or whatsoever should not have at any time been convicted, full stop. But now I'm thinking of my younger brother, who at the age of 10 happened to steal a loaf of bread because of the trunk. He gets convicted for theft. Or whatever, sentenced to do community work. So later in his life, after completion of his degree, he goes and studies in the line of aviation and all those sorts of things. At 30, he's an expert. Are you saying that he cannot be appointed as a member of ASIC, carrying all the expertise and qualifications? Because it only says no criminal conviction. It doesn't say, it doesn't qualify at any level. It's on the basis of the crime that could have been committed. So maybe if you can clarify the question. Over to you.
Thank you. If I can just get jumped in the first question you posed with regard to the legal issue. You made mention of not apportioning blame, and then you said to a second slide in terms of taking legal action. Which slide is that?
The slide that you can institute legal action is slide 31, powers of African investigator. Your third bullet from the bottom. That those investigators or ASIC can institute or defend any legal action. Now I'm taking the one that says can institute. But once you institute, the assumption is that there's something wrong. You are already a person claim to someone for which you want to test the correctness of that, or the authenticity of your attitude or conclusion in the court of law. I might be wrong. I rely on your knowledge.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. All those questions, I'll try my best to respond to each one, but I will start with one and chat and everything that we today try and stuff. I think starting off with a long title, Aviation Safety Investigation Board, and we're talking about aircraft action, aircraft incidents. We can generate what happens in the world. And Aviation Safety Investigation Board, its core purpose is to promote safety. The end result of effort, by virtue of investigation, is to ensure that corrective action is taken, recommendations are made, and it prevents a reoccurrence of an accident, thereby establishing the level of safety within the industry. So hence the title, Aviation Safety Investigation Board. To investigate aircraft accidents, aircraft incidents, with an end core intent of making sure that there is a high element of safety within the industry. Now, in regards to the commercial aircraft, in the definition we have air carrier. An air carrier means any scheduled airline or non-scheduled. The private aviation operators, small aircraft, the QAP, people on board the aircraft are not scheduled carriers, they're non-scheduled. They decide when they want to fly, which airspace you're flying to, what the destination points are going to be. So that covers the smaller aircraft, and the reference to the smaller on aircraft is general aviation. So when you look at the civil aviation authority, in terms of oversight, general aviation forms a very, very strong component of the oversight of general aviation. When an accident happens in general aviation, by virtue of it being an air carrier, the accident case investigation board will investigate the aircraft accident, the aircraft incident. Will only not investigate a defense force accident or one with the service and police services. Okay. With regards to the inspection,
sorry, just on that one, because my point is on the commercial. Because Mr. Tao might be rich from Cuba, Mr. Tao wants to. He's flying the aircraft for leisure purposes, not for commercial interest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you get the question raised.
I
because my proposal would be then to say we just say commercial and non commercial aircraft to cover your part. I don't think I'll be wrong if I propose that.
I don't think the honourable member is wrong. If we want, we could enter in that non-commercial element to give more clarity to the actual clause. Okay. With regards to the department's investigation and inspection, and why the independence of the accident safety investigation board, the department is the responsible for the South African Civil Aviation Authority, which is an entity, and that entity is responsible to provide oversight for safety and security for aviation. The Aviation Safety Investigation Board's mandate is to investigate accidents independently and incidents independently and make a report not only to the minister, but more so when we read the act, to go and circulate the report to all other contacting states. So it's peer throughout the world. There will be other Aviation Safety Investigation Boards that are also independent, whether it's in Australia or as we have a National Transport Safety Board in the United States. Independent, there's no politicians, independence, no land reporting in terms of the authority. They investigate, they make recommendations, and they take the direction from the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is the ultimate governing body for success. Now, I also want to pause here and make it clear that this investigation board is not similar to, without mentioning other investigation boards that we have in the country, where there may be problems. This investigation board is for the purposes of accident prevention, and when they do investigate, the report are not to be utilized for criminal prosecution. So it's not a unit that's going to be set up, or a board that's going to be set up that will go off on their own high horse and start investigating for other purposes. They have a very strict mandate to find out what the cause of the accident was, make recommendations, circulate the report as such, to prevent a reoccurrence. No criminal liability. And that hinges on one of the cases, your question, in terms of instituting legal action. The type of legal action that the board may institute, for example, a person may own an aviation maintenance organization, and they may want to take steps to destroy something, or they may want to take steps to hide facts. You may want to then approach, take a legal remedy and say, fine, stop this person, leave 1-3, because we are in the cause of instigating an accident. But they will not institute legal action with the intent of prosecution. They cannot do that. Because Annex 13 of our CAI is quite clear of what they can and what they cannot do for a conviction.
The purpose is to
jab
information,
yes,
as an example.
Yes, that's it. Okay, now, on the next honorable member's question, who is currently conducting investigation is a very valid point. That's where we have that in audit. Currently, the investigations are conducted by the South African Civil Aviation Authority. The challenge you have there is that the South African Civil Aviation Authority cannot investigate itself. Because by being the entity responsible for licenses, for inspections, for testing, when you do conduct an investigation overall for an aircraft accident, you also investigate the South African Civil Aviation Authority. The day flip up, the day issue up, fraudulent license, did they not conduct a proper inspection? So you can't have the same party investigating themselves. So when we were audited by both the Federal Aviation Administration and the International Civil Aviation Organization, the question came about is that you do not have the independence of an accident safety or aviation safety investigation board remote from the Civil Aviation Authority. You have an investigation unit, but you have it with the Civil Aviation Authority. It doesn't make sense. So left them to be a commercial aircraft or a commercial aircraft. But you also get incidents where a commercial aircraft may also collide with a specific force aircraft that may have just came for inspection or may came for an air show or may have just came for testing purposes. Hence, there has to be that coordination between CASIP for the investigation part in terms of the commercial aircraft that's involved, as well as ensuring the coordinating activity between the forces aircraft that may have been involved in the collision. Okay? Because this is just the nature of the industry. You generally have specific force aircraft or specific force air crew in the country that may be conducting aviation operations and such. And we can't leave that out of the legislation, because when an incident do happen, we must make sure we have case for that kind of investigation to continue. In the remuneration of staff, with regard to the remuneration of staff, we have not put in scales that the staff will be remunerated XYZ. And I agree with the honour member, had we done that, then if the scales have to move, next year, we need to make an amendment. What we've done is we've captured the independence of the unit, as well as making mention that the varying scales will apply to the staffing members of this investigation board as such. Okay. With regard to employing staff, now, we mentioned that the chairperson will be one full-time member and manage the normal activity of asset and the advanced members will be part-time members and the meet at least 12 times a year, which is once a month, hopefully. The intention is that after we start, the board doesn't go and do the groundwork of investigation action. They will not have the capacity with its 4 members or 5 members to go and conduct an investigation to a large commercial jetliner as such. What they do is, as the aviation safety investigation board, given the seniority of their position and the technical competencies they bring to the table, because the intention is to employ or to appoint highly technical, specialized people that have more than sufficient flight hours and more than sufficient technical aptitude to be able to sit around a board and say, fine, we have now looked at what the investigator, direct investigation has done, what investigators have brought forward. We say yes or no in terms of how the report is going. It's more a supervisory control of the process from an aviation safety investigation board. The direct investigation is your foot soldier. This person is responsible. The jetliner goes down in Pumalanga, he ends up changing cars to see technical experts. If he doesn't have the appropriate expert, and by means of example, it's a specific category of aircraft, and there's only a technical expert in Nigeria, you might say, fine, as a contacting state, can you fly the technical expert? I need to put the team together and investigate the accident. That's his job, the actual groundwork to get together all the evidence and put into a report format. I think we've covered the independence, why the board's independence, and with reference made to not getting into problematic issues that we have with other investigating units. Once again, I'll reiterate, this is a very specialized safety investigation board that does not go after the prosecution list. It's very clear. Sorry?
You missed the last part. The intent is not to prosecute. The intent is not to prosecute.
So I think it's like 44. Okay, we're talking about reports to ministers, and why would ASEP require a minister to respond in writing? Now, generally speaking, the charge of government, the Secretary of Transportation or the Secretary of Defense or whoever, in terms of government as a minister, at that level, given the independence of the aviation safety inspection board and given the fact that they take the direction of an expert in a trial, at that level, they will communicate in terms of writing to a minister, and the minister may get his department to intervene, find out what has happened, and respond back. Now, why you want to be writing is very simple. If the aviation safety investigation board, for example, says that the Department of Agriculture flew an aircraft over a game park at a very low altitude and crashed into a tree, and in terms of the internal rules or regulations that the department has, that aircraft are allowed to fly at that altitude, it's incorrect. As the aviation safety investigation board, we want to prevent a reoccurrence. We to make a recommendation to the minister to make amendments. And the minister goes to the department, department says no, they need to report and write back to the ABC implementation board, because their job is one, to circulate a report which forewarns other parties that X and Y have been done or has not been done. So other parties can then take preventive action as such. So it's not a matter, and I know it's a sensitive issue, it's not a matter of calling a minister to order, placing a minister in a particular difficult position. It's to make sure that there's consistency in terms of getting the information through, putting it into a final report and taking out. Hence, there's also provision made for an interim report for ministers to make their input. So if a minister gets an interim report and says, but you've asked me to do 1, 2, 3, 4, I've done, taken particular call of action, but in your interim report, you're still making doubt as though nothing has happened. The minister is allowed to make comment on it to make sure that the activity taken place was responds. It's not a cut and dry issue where once off you investigate, boom, you put the minister on the spot and immediately you send out a final report. That would be one, that would be unfair. It would also be not the most appropriate thing to do because it takes time in this industry to take corrective action. But also it's also important that the time frame that we've adjusted, 60 to 90, is adequate time frame to ensure that we don't have a very quick reoccurrence of an accident. It was comment made with regards to doing the work on behalf of the department. Once again, we just want to clarify the issues on behalf of the state. The Aviation Safety Investigation Board needs to perform this function on behalf of the state. South Africa is a contracting state to ACAIO, and all ACAIO contracting states need to ensure that by carrying out the convention, they need to carry out each and every annex. And Annex 13 deals specifically with this matter. Our Aviation Act was done in 1962, one of us and all of the members. From 1962 up until now, we did not address these issues and these elements. But also we are lucky that we have not had a large-scale commercial jetliner crash on our soil. We had one crash in Mauritian territorial waters, but we have never had a jetliner crashing on South African soil. So we've been lucky. However, we need to ensure that we have the legislation in place that continues expanding on that luck as such. I'm still going to answer all questions I haven't. Please pardon me and maybe.
Conviction.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. I heard the example on of the thing you wrote for bread. Section 16, if you go to I, sub I, tell you at any time being convicted within the Republic or elsewhere. On page 20,
B3B.
Section 16, 1I, Roman numeral I. Because there has any time been convicted. Made with regard to grade wouldn't fall into the past if I understand them correctly.
Security matter, how do you deal with such incidents and so on. will this bill also allow for maybe reopening of some of these investigations? Because since then other information has come to light and so on with regard to how the plane was going to crash land.
If I may just respond to first the contracting state issue and then to the last one in regards to reopening of investigation, I think it's obviously a very important issue. Contracting states, we're not talking about commercial contracting, we're talking about parties to the convention. The convention is attached to the latest document, but obviously the annexes are not, because the annexes are quite voluminous in nature. But if the honorable member requires, we can make available Annex 30 for an understanding of what Annex 30 sets out. We can do that. With regards to investigation into accidents and just use the example used in terms of the presidential jet that went down, existing legislation already allows for investigation by virtue of the constitution. The fact that an aircraft is now airspace means that South Africa has sovereign control of its aircraft. The constitution allows for an board inquiry by the president may put into place, and that's existing already. So we're not putting something that is already not legal to that new principle. Say we have also spoken about a constitution where the president may institute a commission inquiry as such. The Aviation Safety Investigation Board, to go back and investigate all the accidents, the transition phase where incidents have already been investigated with the Commission Trophy, but it's still left open within all in line with this book. Accidents that are going back to 1986, 85 on the world ship, it's already been investigated by virtue of having this new bill in place. Unless someone decides, let's get the president to go into appointing a board of a commission inquiry. And that we don't have to do that, the constitution is there. Thank you. Proceed onwards here to the Civil Aviation Authority, which is on slide. Section 21 and 22 of the bill provides for the establishment of the South African Civil Aviation Authority, the acronym being CAA. CAA is a jurisdiction person. The object of CAA is to control, regulate civil aviation safety and security, oversee safety and security matters in the civil aviation industry, oversee the functioning and development of the civil aviation industry, and promote civil aviation safety and security. The functions are covered in Section 23. The CAA conducts safety and security oversight of civil aviation by developing, promoting regulatory requirements, technical aviation safety and security standards, developing enforcement strategies to secure compliance with aviation safety and security standards, issuing out certificates, licenses, etc., conducting aviation industry surveillance, assessment of safety and security related decisions, overseeing and regulating flight inspections of navigational aids to aviation, conducting reviews of civil aviation safety and security systems. Just a quick pause for understanding the members how the CAA operates. If you look at the bullet point conducting aviation industry surveillance, what ACAIO requires is for the CAA to have a master surveillance program. It's a plan of the 15 different participants of aviation in the country. We as the CAA will inspect operator 1, 2, 3, 4 in that time frame, and these are the kind of inspections we'll conduct. So it's a very rigid surveillance program. However, there are alarm bells. For example, the CAA ad hoc inspection at the airport, they may pick up an aircraft that isn't airworthy, and if I didn't say fine, we have not investigated this aircraft maintenance organization in the last 2 months, we need to go and investigate this aircraft maintenance organization because it will appear that there seems to be a problem. So they work on a very structured surveillance program. Section 70 continues, safety and security related functions, encouraging acceptance by the industry of obligation to maintain high standards of aviation safety, safety and security education training programs, advise and awareness of the importance of aviation safety and security, communication with all interested parties, and ministers this act, recommend to the minister regarding conclusion of any international agreement, in particular we refer to aviation agreements, investigate aircraft accidents, aircraft incidents, that the Aviation Safety Investigation Board has determined not to investigate. Okay. Now, there might be a question here, and I want to answer the question before the women say, why would the aviation safety investigation board decide not to investigate an accident or an incident? Well, very often, in a number of aircraft accident incidents, a pilot may come up and say, I did not have to be properly at the airport, I overshot the runway because I had too much power. It would be a waste of state resources to go and investigate an accident where, voluntarily, you've already got the information saying this is what has happened. Now, if pilot may have overshot the runway, the CA might want to investigate further and say, why did you shoot the runway? Was an airport problem, the sector, and it made a deeper problem to it. The Aviation Safety Investigation Board has sought the resources to go on what was considered the more serious aircraft accident, aircraft incidents. For example, flight that plowed into a building, 15 people died, we need to know what happened. But when an aircraft is taxied off a runway at some farm and just went into a fence, we got to weigh up. Is it reasonable to send all those resources to go and investigate that incident when you know what has actually happened? Funding under the Reference Civil Aviation Authority, Section 74, the fee is funded from regulatory charges, fees and levies, loans, money received in terms of the Reference Civil Aviation Authority levies tax, and levies on the
supply. You wait until people have died.
No. Sorry, Honorable Member, that's not the intent. I think maybe I should just quantify. If a pilot tells you, I didn't want to see and this is what caused the accident, there's no need to go and do a full in detail investigation. You've already known what the problem is. Okay. Honorable Member, Honorable Chair, I think the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, by virtue of their competence, will be able to gather with the guy's lying or not lying, given the situation and the incident.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Honorable Chair. Also, if you go earlier back into the bill, we spoke about courtesy. So, agencies have found, and we are currently as it sits with existing legislation, you've seen some accidents and incidents that have happened a couple of years back where new information has come through and it shows that it has been courtesy. In this prosecution, that's when assets can initiate a prosecution or go down a prosecution. So, I think the flight deck crew will be very wary of making incorrect and false statements. The Civil Aviation Authority Board is the next item. Section 75 and 76 establishes deal with establishing function as a responsibility of the Civil Aviation Authority Board. CAA Board is established, oversees the corporate governance of CAA, provides strategic direction of corporate governance on the agenda of set out in Section 72 of the bill, sets out to monitor service standards and customer satisfaction levels, and to report to the Minister on any matter concerning such issues. Responsibilities are to determine, oversee, and revise the corporate governance structure within the CAA, to determine, oversee, and revise human resource policies and human resources strategies for the CAA. For the year, when we had the assessment and audit done in 2007, we just undertook the assessment of capacity of the CAA in terms of technical competencies to oversee the entire industry. Suffice to say, end of 2017 or 2008, we are now at a 98% mark. The board also to determine and compile a corporate governance plan in respect of the CAA, determine the policy for conditional employment and remuneration allowances and other service benefits of employees of the CAA other than the director of the CAA, and to compile an annual report on the financial state of affairs of the CAA. The board acts as the accounting authority for the CAA, and they may appoint committees to advise it on the exercise of powers and functions. Appointment of members, Section 77. Board consists of 7 members and the 18 director of the CAA. 7 members, one of the non-executive chairperson appointed for 3 years, eligible for reappointment for 1 term only. One of the ministers specified an office in the department, the person holding that office. One of the persons suitable expertise in human resource management. 2 of the persons representative of the civilization industry with suitable financial or operational expertise. One of the legally qualified persons expertise in aviation law. And one must be a person with civil aviation acknowledged technical competencies involved in organized labor from the aviation industry. And lastly, the director of the CAA is also a member of the board. Meeting remuneration of the members, Section 38.82. Meetings to be held at a time and place to be determined by chairperson. 5 members form a quorum. chairperson prepares all meetings, appointed members receive remuneration as determined by the minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Section 80-84 deals with the removal of members in a conflict of interest. Members vacate office immediately if they are convicted of specific offences. Without authorization, discloses information gained as a result of membership, is or become a political office bearer, has any time been removed from the office of trust on account of misconduct, is relieved of office by minister in accordance with this act. Honourable Chair, I just want to pause here because when we had the portfolio committee of task force, we had to rearrange the sub clauses. It was felt that when we said is or become a political office bearer, followed after has any time been removed from office of trust on account of misconduct. And we had to rearrange the order to bring it up to make it a lot more proficient as such without taking any indication from the previous subset. So we don't want to upset any members, but we put it down here as diplomatically as possible, but as reasonably as possible in terms of what the world requires. Okay. And then lastly,
there is also this conviction of specific offenses. What are those? Maybe at least now you are coming okay, so that you don't just generalize.
It's better at Section
69. Yeah, okay, I'll give you the specific offenses. It's on page 42 of the bill. Go to 80, section 81, page 42, Honourable Chair. Roman 1 and Roman 2. We talk convicted within the Republic or else of murder, robbery, theft, fraud, forgery, or asking a forged document, but to any other offence involving dishonesty. And then we go on to Roman 2, we talk about an offense in terms of prevention and combating of crime activities act. And the other case any as well. Section 81A, Roman I.
It was speaking about the sentence of 1 year. Maybe we were looking at the one of ASIP. Could we also look into something like that? Because as it stands now, it will then cover what the chairperson was raising initially, where you also say theft of a stroke seat, you say 3 months of suspended sentence also still applies.
Maybe as a committee, we might also look at effecting certain amendments using this very thing. Because now you look at the S8 thing, see? S8 colloquium. Aviation. C-8-8. takes us to the Corruption Act of 1958. That has not been amended. And CAA speaks of an act of 2004, and ACID refers us to a constitution of 1993. Legal aspect, yeah, thank you.
No, I just wanted to ask if you are talking about section 16.
Yes, 16.
16.1 AI. Expert of hospital was also mentioned
there. Where?
Responsible for the submission to CA Board of an annual report concerning the activities. 1988 and 89 deals with the powers, employment, and delegation. The director may designate one or more persons in service of PA as inspectors or authorized officers, and persons not in service of PA as authorized persons. I'll explain the second subsection, but I'm sure I'm going to get a question on the chief. We say not in service of PAA. Generally speaking, the rating industry operates globally because of the scarcity in resources. The CA, and I may make use by example, the CA may subcontract or may designate an inspector as an airline A in the country, to perform a particular kind of inspection. But the inspector will perform the inspection on airlines B, C, and D, not on his own airline, for a particular period. And that's the only way you can deal with the scarcity in resources globally for this particular aviation industry. The director may limit powers of authorized officers, inspectors, or authorized persons, may in the prescribed manner issue any license, certificate, registration, or authorization required in terms of this act. Acting director, section 90, not exceeding 30 days, the director may, in the event of director's absence from the public or inability to fulfill duties, appoint a member of staff of the CA to act as director. The period of appointment as acting director may not exceed 30 days. Where it exceeds 30 days, the minister appoints an acting director in the absence of the director, and the acting director may not act for more than 12 months. Consultation, conflict of interest, section 91.93. The director must, in performance of functions, endeavor to consult with relevant persons or body. Conflict of interest is prohibited. The director may not hold direct or indirect financial interest in some aviation activity without prior approval of the minister. Ministerial order. Section 100. The minister may, after consultation with the CA in writing, issue an order in respect of aviation matters requiring the CA to do or not to do what is mentioned in the order, if the minister considers it necessary so to order in the interest of aviation safety and security, or to discharge the federal state, discharge of an international obligation of the state. Judicial management and liquidation of CA, section 101. Despite the provision of any other law, the CA may not be placed under judicial management or in liquidation, except if authorized by an Act of Parliament adopted expressly for that purpose. Aviation Security, Section 102, National Aviation Security Policy. Honorable Chair, a little bit of background information for the members. Pre-9/11, there wasn't focus on aviation security, but more on aviation safety. Post-9/11, with security threats and the global issues at airports and traveling modes, there's been a necessary move to start focusing on aviation security by ACAI, not just by South Africa. And what ACAI has come out with is the National Aviation Security Program in terms of Annex 17. Every state, contracting state, must have a National Aviation Security Program. That program sets out what your various airports need to do in terms of security plan, what your various airline operators need to do, or any other party involved in aviation. The state National Aviation Security Program must be signed and approved by the minister. The security plan must be executed by the various entities or various parties, and the CAA must provide oversight and security plan. So, for example, once again, if an airport says I'm going to have 4 X-ray machines, and it's going to be of that technical specification, and then they get a license to see it operate at the airport, and when an inspection is conducted, you find you've got 2 X-ray machines of a different specification, it becomes an offense. Because this is how the industry has operated in the past without a firm framework of regulations, and in order to be able to ensure that you have a very secure aviation network, you need to have a security program where everybody falls in line with the aviation security program. Hence, Section 102 is subject to this Act, the Department is responsible for the development of a national civil aviation policies of the state. The national aviation security responsibilities are covered in Section 103. The Department is responsible for the compilation, revision, and development of a national aviation security program, the establishment, production, promulgation, and review of the national aviation security program to ensure it continues to meet the state's obligations and is consistent with government policy, the defining and allocating of tasks within government policy for the implementation. National Aviation Security Program as between states. The object of the NAS, which is the National Aviation Security Committee, Section 104 and 105, the minister must institute a National Aviation Security provide for coordination to ensure proper and diligent implementation of the National Aviation Security Program. Aviation Security Program submitted to the Minister for Approval, Section 109, and Aviation Security Program is drawn up in terms of this Act shall be submitted to the Minister for Approval and shall by virtue of such approval be binding. Determined by the Minister, Section 110, the Minister must, in consultation with the Service Authority and with concurrence of the person in charge of the designated airport, approve the appointment of the person responsible for the execution of the security program of such airport. Aviation participants required to have a National Aviation Security Program, Section 111. Following participants, the operator of a designated airport, the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company, any air carrier, and any other participant designated by the Minister from time to time in the Gazette. Offences, Section 112. Any person who contravenes provision of this part except Section 111, or contravenes or fails to comply with any provision of a safety plan approved by the Minister and whereof the contents have been brought to his or her notice, is guilty of an offence. Honourable Chair, if there's any question on the National Aviation Security Program, I can take it now.
Chairperson, it's not on the security program. I'm not sure whether we still come into that. But there is this issue that you need to have certain services in airports, like the immigration, police, and so on. Like most of our airports have also been upgraded to be international airports. But the issue of health services, I just wanted to get if that is still coming, or if it's still coming, it's fine.
Right.
That's
the only question.
Okay, thank you. Very technical question, but appropriate question from the chair, from the member. The items that the honourable member referred to, immigration, customs, etc., fall under what you call facilitation. Annexure 9 of the convention deals with facilitation. Now, the airport, when you get an airport license, for example, if you want to become an international airport, it's part of your licensing process that those facilities will be at the airport. So let's say AFSA under the Airport Companies Act and then apply for a license to the CAA will have to ensure that the facilitation element is fulfilled before obtaining a license. So it will not be covered in this Act because this deal will take the security oversight to be dealt with the Airport Companies Act and the other various pieces of regulation. We move to monitoring and enforcement of regulatory compliance by the CAA. Section 113 deals with monitoring of regulatory compliance. An authorized officer, authorized person, section may, without warrant, enter aircraft, place or premises, inspect, examine objects, and make copies from any book or document that such person believes on reasonable grounds contains information relevant to the administration of the Act. Private dwelling may only be entered without warrant if believed that object may be destroyed, tampered with, or disposed of if a warrant is obtained first. Grounding of aircraft, closing of facilities, Section 115. If aircraft is intended to light or likely to be sold under circumstances contravening this Act or will cause imminent danger, authorized officer inspector may ground any aircraft or close any aviation related facility. The director may lift the grounding order when specified that the Act is complied with. Prohibition of exercising of privileges, Section 116. The authorized officer inspector may prohibit holder of aviation. Right. Of aviation certificate, permit, or authorization to exercise such privilege if the Act is likely to be contravened or there is imminent danger to person in aircraft or person or property on the ground. Administrative appeal. This part of the bill deals with efficiency of the CAA and with regard to the aviation procedure taken. Previously, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, it was a very lengthy, protracted process. If you had an airline pilot that had a license suspended, possibly they could wait 6 months, a year, 2 years without working until such time someone addressed the issue of the suspension of the license. We now got in the bill and the station process, and I'll deal with this now, where Section 117 and 118 deal with appeals against decision of authorized officers, authorized personnel, inspectors. The decision has the same meaning as applying in bargain. An aggrieved person may lodge a written appeal with the director within 30 days. The director within 3 days may amend, withdraw, or make a new decision. The person aggrieved by the decision of the director may then within 5 days appeal to an appeals committee. Appeal against the refusal or cancellation of medical certificate, section 119. The applicant for or holder of a medical certificate will feel aggrieved by a decision to cancel medical certificate, decision declaring him or her unfit or temporarily unfit, endorsing the medical certificate may appeal to the director within 60 days. The director assisted by at least 2 medical practitioners, one must have experience in aviation medicine. The appeal to be considered within 60 days of receipt thereof. It's still not satisfied, that person may then proceed to the high court. So there's 2 processes. One deals with a medical issue and the other deals with a normal cause of business issue. Appeals against the decision of director, section 120. Any person aggrieved by a decision taken by the director, excluding the decision of medical certificate, may appeal to the appeals committee within 30 days. Composition of appeals committee, section 122. The minister may appoint an appeals committee or committees. The appeal committee consists of persons with not less than 10 years' experience as attorney or advocate, presiding officers, and 2 other persons, appointed on a part-time basis, technical knowledge, experience in aviation related fields, special skills qualification, experience in aviation required. Persons having direct or indirect personal interest in outcome of appeal may be disqualified as a member of such committee. Members hold office for 3 years and eligible for reappointment. The minister may terminate for a period of office of member if performance unsatisfactory or if the member is unable to perform the functions effectively. Condition of service, quorum and meeting, section 123 and 124. Conditions of service are prescribed by the minister with approval of the Minister of Finance. All members of the appeal committee constitute a quorum. Procedure at the appeals committee is determined by chairperson of the appeals committee. The chairperson may summon any person having information concerning the subject of the hearing or call any person as a witness. Decision and general provisions, section 125 and 126. The appeals committee may confirm various set aside decisions. The decision of the appeals committee must be made in writing within 21 days of date of hearing of the appeal. Chairperson must maintain the record of proceedings. No person is excused from complying with the act on the ground if the appeal is pending. Appeal against decision of appeal committee and administrative work. Any person affected by decision of an appeal committee may appeal to the High Court. The administrative work of the appeals committee are performed by the employer of the Selection Commission Authority. Procedures for identifying, notifying of differences and issuing of exemptions is covered in section 139-130. Procedures for identifying and notifying of differences are as prescribed. Director may exempt a person or body from compliance with the Act on specific conditions. Exemption may not be granted for a period longer than 180 days, possible to extend for further 180 days. Compliance with Annex 2 of the Convention, which is the marshalling signals, interception maneuvers and orders, covered in section 131. South African aircraft must comply with marshalling signals, interception orders and maneuvers issued by any state. Aircraft in South African airspace must comply with marshalling signals, interception orders or maneuver issued by South African aircraft. Means an example, an aircraft comes out of airspace, considered there may be a check on board, we may give it a marking order and set the aircraft and ask it to fly up to Uppington, which is a remote airport, to mitigate any issue that may arise. But Sunday of functions and duties, Article 83 risk. This deals with the leasing of aircraft, wet leasing from a foreign country. It's covered in section 132. When an aircraft registered in the contracting state is operated by lease agreement aircraft, the minister by agreement with such state transfers all or part of the customs duties. The director must, under specific circumstances, recognize the validity of licenses and certificates issued by the other contracting state. Offenses and penalties, Section 193. Any person who on board an aircraft without lawful reason seizes or exercises control of an aircraft, commits an act of violence, willfully interferes with any member of the crew, destroys or causes damage to aircraft, places an aircraft with device which is likely to destroy the aircraft, destroys or damages any navigation facilities, communicates information to he or she knows to be called, says that any airport any device is calculated to endanger, injure, kill any person, commits an act in an airport which is likely to cause serious injury, then performs any other act which jeopardizes or may jeopardize the operation of the air carrier, safety of an airport, good or unlisted in the airport, is guilty of an offense. Interference with the operation of air carrier, airport or heliport, section 184, a person who interferes with the operation of air carrier, airport or heliport is guilty of an offense. disorderly or indecent act on board aircraft, a person who causes nuisance or performs a disorderly or indecent act on board an aircraft is guilty of an offense. Bit on the case, indecent act. The last comment you asked me to explain, it's an indecent act. Especially on international side. Thank you.
No, I was just saying like people on a honeymoon. But Chairperson, on a serious note, if you look on page 61, okay, it then speaks of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment not exceeding 8 years or to both such a fine and imprisonment. Let's say the person we're talking about here caused that plane to crash and you have more than 30 passengers who have died. Are you still going to restrict yourself to these 8 years? Because the nature of that offense might be saying the person deserves a life sentence. While other people like Mr. Krumbok might call for a death sentence.
No. He asked for it.
Sorry for waking up, Mr. Krumbok.
They still be alive.
Let's say the person gets lucky, he's alive. And he says, in terms of this law, you can't sentence me more than 10 years. It's a rare possibility, I know. Nothing is impossible. No, they may look at it and come back to us. I think we're not finalizing the field today.
Okay.
Take that as a homework.
Okay. Sections 185 we've covered. Interference with director and member staff to assets, section 186. A person who calls an interference willfully hinders or obstructs the director or member of the CA or the staff to actually take information board ability for an offense. Smoking on board aircraft, tampering with smoke detectors, operating portable electronic devices is prohibited, section 137. Person who smokes on board an aircraft, tampers with smoke detector, or operates a portable electronic device when prohibited is guilty of an offense. Illegal practice in connection with cargo, baggage, mail, or other goods, section 138. Persons who within an aerodrome and without authority tampers with open damages or detains or skips cargo and uses any person to deliver to dispose of such cargo baggage is guilty of an offense. We had to start this particular section, Honorable Chair. We had a challenge for years in terms of baggage tests at airports. And the challenge you have is that when someone steals from a bag, the complainant has to be the one who opens the door. And international flights, people are going abroad, they're not going to come back into the country to open a charge for a 2,000 camera. Okay, so those cases are normally double run. So we have to be creative and find a way where we can then take action against those that interfere with baggage. And rearrange your luggage to take stuff away. And hence we've got this thought where the person tampers with the bag, opens it, damages and moves around, and he's found to be doing so, can then be prosecuted and convicted with the given process. We hope it will have a positive impact in reducing the problem with the prohibition and control in the aircraft, section 139. A person may not board or attempt to board aircraft if such person has his or her possession any harmful article. A person who wishes to consign any harmful article must do so in a manner prescribed by the regulations of the convention. Okay, in the last clause we talk about harmful article, categories of dangerous goods. Archaio makes provision to transport dangerous goods on board an aircraft, but they need to be packaged in a particular way, segregated, all kinds of issues. So, the second part is covering, for example, people that transport a lot of cargo. A you know, make sure they do it within the legal prescription of what Akai requires, not in the world guilty of that. So aviation control in restricted areas and in aviation facilities, section 140.1. No person may enter a restricted area, lying position, any harmful article unless that person is an authorized person, authorized in writing to be in a restricted area, a passenger or crew member who is in the restricted area for purpose of taking possession of baggage containing a harmful article, authorized person or person in control of aviation facility may refuse entry into restricted area. Prohibition of convenience of armament, drugs, or animal products, section 142.
The one of the smoking and who protects?
Okay, normally what will happen is if somebody smokes on board the aircraft, the commander the aircraft is the commander in charge. Normally the commander comes up and makes complaint to the police service and starts with opening the door. Because the person that endangers his aircraft in flight. So it'd be the airline such that needs to be the complainant.
Just a quick follow-up. If Cuba and Algeria are part
of contacting state? Yes, Algeria will be a contacting state, and I'm not sure if Cuba is.
I don't smoke in Cuba.
No, because I mean, the reason why I'm asking this question is because there's two interests in this. One in Algeria. Someone goes to the smoke. If I'm speaking as the leader of Algeria. Of Cuba. Just on board France. An hour before then, the last is the time. On landing, Cuba does not have regulation or law that prohibits smoking on board the aircraft. Now, when he lands there, there's nothing that can be done. And he can't be flown back. No. That's why I was asking, I asked a specific question. These two, and other countries, of course, where tobacco is okay.
You're right, if you don't have regulation, you won't have to do. But in the case you make a contract in state, the obligation, you know, will do it.
I just found it interesting.
Raising a point, but you have to check on that. I don't think so. A contracting state can file what you call a difference with a client. But normally, the difference are, for example, a contracting state might say, we require you, giving a certain example, we require state blood of every person that's flying on board an aircraft or every aircrew. And we know we have a constitutional issue in terms of that. Okay? We can file a difference. It's not possible, however, we have a different process in which we do 1, 2, 3. Now, what my colleague is saying is perhaps the state may have filed a difference or regarding smoking on one aircraft that is highly charged. So, I can only say back to the honorable chair that they have people have. Okay, so we got the prohibition of the means of armament, drugs, or animal products, section 142. Except for written permission, means that no person shall convey armament, drugs, or animal products in aircraft. Aircraft is believed to be conveying armaments, drugs, or animal products is subject to regulation regarding identification and interception of aircraft with regard to the Tokyo Convention. Authorized person may, without a warrant, search any aircraft reasonably believed aircraft is used to convey armaments, drugs, or animal products, seizure of armaments, drugs, or animal products, seize any aircraft on which armaments, drugs, or animal products are found, arrest any person who is found on board an aircraft and reasonably suspect of having committed an offense. Safety security, section 143. The minister may, if of the opinion that an action or act by any person or group of persons threaten the safety of aircraft, airport, or aviation facility, may issue orders as necessary to counter such action. Authorized person may take such steps as necessary to comply with the order. Person who fails or refuses to give effect to such order is guilty of an offense. The Nazis for Conservation of Section 183 to 142, 145, 148, Accounting Section 144. Personal who contravenes or commits an offense under this Act, Convention can't regain the liability of fine and imprisonment. If person holds up a license or certificate, the court will grant to sustain such license or certificate. The director may impose an administrative penalty for failing to comply with this Act. If person fails to pay an administrative penalty, CA may recover such amount from such person. Such seizure and powers of arrest by authorized person, Section 145. Authorized person may, in interest of case in security, without warrant, search person's baggage, vehicles, etc. This happens here on a daily basis when you go to the airport. Minister may direct manager of airport in charge of search of all persons, baggage, vehicles, personnel, etc. Failure to comply with direction of minister is an offense. Airport manager may direct authorized person to conduct search of persons, vehicle, baggage, personnel, etc. if necessary for the security of the airport. Authorized person may, if it is believed that a search is necessary for security of any airport without warrant, search any building, structure, equipment, etc. The authorized person may indict an order person who refuses to be searched to leave airport or heliport immediately. Any search contemplated in this section must be conducted with strict regard for decency and order with respect to each person's rights, dignity, freedom, security, and privacy. Seizure of retention of harmful articles, Section 146. Authorized person may seize any harmful article found during a search carried out in Section 145. Harmful articles seized must be delivered to a police official. Powers of arrest and call for identification by authorized persons are in 147 and 148 section. Authorized person may, without warrant, arrest any person who has committed or is suspected or committed an offense prepared to in this Act. Authorized person may, if it is considered necessary in terms of security, call upon any person in any airport, any navigation facility, supply full name and address. Delegation of powers, section 149. The minister may, on condition, delegate in writing to the director any or all powers conferred by this Act, save a power to make regulation. Act or omission statement is after the Republic, section 150. Any act or omission on board a South African registered aircraft after the Republic, which if it took place in or over the Republic, would have been an offense, constitute that offense. Act of emission taking place after the Republic continued. Any act contemplated in section 138, 139, 141, and 142 committed offense to the Republic on board any aircraft in flight under the direction of the aircraft, an act of violence against passengers or crew is considered to have been committed in the Republic. If aircraft lands in the Republic where a person who committed the act is still on board, if such aircraft is deemed without crew, to a DC who has principal place of business in the Republic, a person is present in the Republic, a person is apprehended in the Republic. Jurisdiction, section 151, any offense contemplated section 152, is considered to have been committed in any place where the accused happens to be or is found. Extradition, section 152, for the purpose of the Extradition Act 1962, when offense committed on board aircraft is flight, aircraft registered in convention country must, while in flight, be considered to be within the jurisdiction of that country. Landing on an aircraft in any convention country with offend on board will result in offense being considered to be committed in that country. Where aircraft was leased without crew to a DC, where principal base of business in convention country, offense will be considered to have been committed in that country. Admissibility of status, section 153. In court proceedings in the Republic for offense committed on board an aircraft, person cannot be found in the Republic, statement relating to the subject matter is admissible as evidence is made under oath. An officer, having functions corresponding to the functions of the Republic of a judge or magistrate or counsel or officer, and in the presence of the person charged with the offense. Powers on board the aircraft, section 154. If commander of aircraft in flight believes that any person on board has or is about to do any act which jeopardizes the safety of the aircraft, the commander must take measures to protect the safety of the aircraft in person, to maintain good order and discipline on board. Any person on board may render assistance in restraining the person whom the commander is entitled to restrain. Commander of aircraft may disembark the person in any country in which this aircraft may be and deliver that person to the relevant officials. Regulations, section 155. The minister may make regulations regarding the carrying out of or giving effect to the Convention Council Agreement, powers and duties of director, qualification, powers and duties of authorized persons, protection of authorized persons, designation of medical examiners. designation of one or more bodies for the purpose of exercising control over medical examination and tests, exercising control over attending calls specified in the regulations, exercising control over aviation regulations, activities specified in the regulations, and the promotion of aviation safety or to reduce the risk of aircraft accidents, aircraft incidents. The reporting or the investigation of aircraft accidents, incidents, and other aspects giving effect to this act. Civil Aviation Regulations Committee. We currently have a Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, but we have to put in the crime case of legislation. And as I go to the presentation, I understand exactly why. Consolidated Structures and the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, Section 166 and 167. By virtue of the military making regulations and its effective impact on the aviation industry, you need to have the industry stakeholders part of the regulation process because you have some stuff in it. So you have a Civil Aviation Regulations Committee on the purpose. And say the institution of consultation structure by Civil Aviation Authority for the purpose of the making of regulations in terms of Section 155. The director must institute a Civil Aviation Regulations Committee to advise the minister of proposal with regard to the introduction of any regulation made in the under Section 155. Members of the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee to include stakeholders. Civil Aviation Regulations Subcommittee, Section 1 of 59. The Civil Aviation Regulations Committee may, with the approval of the director, establish such subcommittees as may be necessary for the performance of its functions. Remuneration for the committee, no remuneration applicable for members of staff. All administrative work for the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee to be undertaken by the employees of the Civil Aviation Authority. Emergency regulations. This is one of the main issues which the Federal Aviation Administration found in 2010 in terms of being able to respond immediately to any threat. Hence, we have an emergency regulation put in the primary legislation. The director may, in the event of any threat or imminent threat to safety and security to aviation, initiate the promulgation of emergency regulations in order to counter such threat or imminent threat. Any such regulation issued must not be inconsistent with the provisions of the Constitution or any other law administered by the CAA. Any emergency regulation must be reconsidered by the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee within 90 days of promulgation. The committee may propose to repeal, vary, or amend such regulations. Section 163 covers the technical standards. The director may issue technical standards for civil aviation. Transitional provisions, Section 164. Authorization of certificates, licenses, permissions, or registrations issued in terms of an act repealed by this act remains valid for periods specified in the authorization for certificates. Person who occupies the post or serves in a particular capacity continues in the corresponding post or capacity. Person who receives an allowance, remuneration, and benefits continues to receive such allowance, remuneration, and benefits. Powers exercised or duties performed as CEO or the committee of preservation must be considered having been exercised or performed by the director. Section 165 covers matters pending under previous acts. Promulgation of this act does not affect any proceeding instituted in terms of the previous act administered by the CAA. Amendment and repeal of laws are covered in Section 166. The law mentioned in Schedule 1 are amended to the extent set out in the schedule. Act binding on the state, Section 167, this act binds the state. And in the short title and commencement, Section 168, this act is called the Civil Aviation Act 2008 and comes into operation on a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette.
Thank you very much, Anna. You were first on that. I allowed the incorrect to wait for the end of the presentation. And if there are members who see
one plan, all you are free to relate. Yeah, just two issues, Chairperson. One on the financial implications. In most cases, when we come to committees, we are told there will be no financial implications. But I think this bill is trying to beef up the security situation when you speak in terms of aviation and so forth. To a large extent, the last part he was addressing it also speaks about law enforcement, particularly around airports and stuff, which would say you would have to extend your security services to those areas, mostly by delegation, which maybe other organs or states might delegate it and so on. Because then I come to my second point, the concern about the security, particularly in private airports and airports, or as you like to call them, aerodromes. You know, I had an experience of using some of them, where you just go and put it in. There are no search, there are no scanners and so on. Even if you land in OR, you just go to the landing in a terminal, you go to your car, whatever, but which might then defeat the objective of, like, dealing with your drugs and so on, things, you know, because let's not have this beautiful legislation which is not enforceable, it's not implementable. So how does, from their point of view, look into dealing with that? There's this interesting story of a car which was stolen around Chauvet, and when the tracing company was following that car, they saw it moving at a Sputnik speed around Latvia. Within 30 minutes, it was had crossed the border to Zimbabwe, which the allegation was that it has been loaded in a cargo plane.
Unfortunately, I think the staff unable to control that person. But he kept on saying, no, I need to return.
I think it's a very interesting one. Unfortunately, case documents, they don't say anything. Throwback, Durban, Port Elizabeth.
Thank you. Some very interesting questions, but yes, we'll try our best. I think I'll refer first, Honourable Chair, to the Honourable Member's question regarding the financial implications. Covered on page 114 here, but I understand that earlier on it said we're going to be consolidating a lot of the existing pieces of legislation. We already have a number of instructions in place. And although the firm is provision with establishment of a number of new structures, the majority of the structures currently exist in the aviation framework. Case in point is the newly Aviation Safety Investigation Board, an amount of which has at least partly been allocated, as well as the appeals committee for which function and amount have been partly allocated to the Probation Authority of Finance. Now, the way to see AV is funded is by what you call a user pay principle. So every time you jump on board an aircraft, there's a fee on your ticket that goes off to the CAA. Okay. Currently, it's sitting at 10 rand per passenger, flying passenger. So that 10 rand is called a safety charge, and it goes into the coffers of the CAA, and from that spot, the CAA manages its entire organization as such. Okay. The fee has not been increased for years, until about a year or so back, when it was increased by 4 rand, and then it was 8 and 4 per 10. Now, given the fact that we're beating up our aviation industry, may entail that the CAA will have to relook at its funding mechanism in terms of use of the principle of evidence limit, fees, or whatever. In terms of an aircraft accident, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, when a commercial jetliner crashes, it's the state's responsibility. Let's say it's a large-scale aircraft, God forbid, aircraft went down in the Makassar Mountain that some people died. The state's responsibility immediately to put together the investigation team to investigate the accident. And we're talking about millions of rand. So we can't quantify the financial implication yet, because it's one time, it may never ever happen. But that's how the financial aspect of a major aircraft accident is covered globally. Okay. You might find it could be an aircraft from a foreign country that came in, and they would also have come on board to ensure that the investigation goes on with the aircraft. The Simulation Regulations Committee is large. It includes airports, includes the air traffic and navigation service, includes a wide area of people in the country, but there is no financial implications because of the consultative process, and we do not remunerate any party that comes to the Malaysian Regulations Committee. All the other structures are existent, and we will not have, I want to say, will not have major financial implications, but not have financial implications would necessitate re-looking at the funding mechanism in the world. We also covered in the bill that the CAA is funded from user fees. It's funded by other service vendors. For example, it can do consultative work at the CAA. By means of example, the CAA may go out to the state of Botswana, and Botswana may require specific skills or training or whatever, and may conduct that and deliver it revenue. So it's a case for that as well. So I hope I've answered the question regarding the financial issues.
You are going to have this, what is it, the investigation. As I was saying, the chapter is going to be full time. That's the financial thing. You say that members of the board must be well taken and understand the on the board. This will have financial issues. I think what the honorable member wants to do is to take into account all the things that they are doing. There will be financial issues. The actual distance is going to affect to what extent. If we have not quantified that, can we do that? so that we know exactly how much to do. So I think that context is
important. Yeah, you have put it to the other way, Shepherdson, because also he started on a very correct footing to say CAA can't investigate themselves. So they need something independent. You would imagine they would have their own offices and, you know, their own funds rather than to be baby-fed by CAA, because then it will amount to a situation where they can't spice the dinner that the vendor feeds them, and so on. Related to that, the other area I spoke about of enforcing for all these laws and so on, which are very good. Because at times, departments come and try to be diplomatic to us. Later on, they say we could not do this mandate, which was authorized by the law, compelled to do because we are underfunded. And now we ask them an innocent question.
Okay, on the second note, the private airports and flying off from any place that are being searched. I think that's why we may mention national security program, and then the budget system will have to have a national security plan. Now, having said that, it will still mean that there might be a person that will have a small case of stomach, and you may want to fly on board an aircraft, jump in the aircraft, flying off from Stellenbosch, and you go to the airport environment, they will not have all the art metal detector scanners and security personnel, whatever. But going in there, but the honorable member just said the risk, there has to be certain things that they may need to comply with in terms of ensuring the person gets on board the aircraft. The aircraft is back for all time, or another person will go while on the aircraft and hijack the aircraft and land in some of the union loading, for example. So there has to be a balance. And that will be taken care of in terms of the actual national aviation security plan and the security program. With regards to the larger airports, when I say larger airports, there's a major airport where 95% of your large-scale air traffic numbers go, based on international or our scandal. There's very clear purpose of what it has to do. It goes with facilitation, it also goes in terms of ensuring that they meet compliance with security, immigration, customs, etc. Domestic flights, we have previously only scanned your international bags being on international bound flights as such. Very soon, the requirement where you also scan check-in luggage for domestic flights. So the flight being in Johannesburg coming to Cape Town, and if you check in a piece of luggage, it will be screened through the screening process before it goes on board the aircraft. So there are those initiatives that are in place that will actually close the net of aviation security. Ask any security expert at Mark 1, they always tell you we can do as much as we can, we can't totally close off everything. Somebody will find a way. You have done. On the next question, which is a very, very valuable question with regard to do we have enough personnel by honorable member in the country. Globally, there's an issue with regard to personnel in the aviation sector. We know that the Far East are buying aircraft, if you can't believe, so is China, and the expansion phase in India with regard to aviation, and the actual drawing of skills is quite high on that end of the market. However, we have also got, I wouldn't want to say the word luxury, but we also got the opportunity where we've had the National Airlines, for example, that had a number of older personnel that went on voluntary early retirement that can come back and pull and help resolve the problem. But that's a short-term fix here. I think the next question is what we were on the in terms of what are we doing to attack the skills goes much wider and outside what we're trying to achieve with the solution book. We have raised in the industry the concern, and perhaps the new administration on the chair might take us up as a task going forward, is that there's a very sharp decline in the quality and the quantity of massive science pupils coming out of the schooling sector. Because that is the breeding ground in terms of getting these schools. If you don't have the massive science coming from the grassroots, you're not going to be able to have quantity of people in the same range in the future. And it's much wider than aviation and deal with others in the country as such. But as I said, hopefully the new administration might take this up as a national priority issue and deal with it. What we do in terms of aviation is that we have, the industry has its own foreigners trying to promote and develop and think about strategies. The department also thinks about strategies and develop strategies in terms of getting skills on board. And PA has programs where they go out and try to promote the both the issue of safety and security aviation, but more so the actual aviation industry, so we can actually get people coming into the system. Unfortunately, the bar for entry is very high, given the technical offices of this. So we might have 1,000 people at the door, but maybe the issue might actually meet the grade as such. But it actually goes back to the quality and quantity of caliber of people we need coming through.
If the Honorable Luzizi was here from the IFT and from there, and you gave that report, particularly when it comes to personnel, I think it would have been better. It's something that is consistent with it, which is very personal. It's about his daughter. With all these qualifications or everything that is in, but the extent to which the industry or the environment has become so close to the previously disadvantaged. And I think the Honourable Member is picking up on that question quite correctly. What is it that the department is doing now to recruit? You don't wait for applications, but you go out proactively and say, here are the boundaries, here are the things, and this is the number of students you want, and so forth and so on. These are the things that we are prepared to assist these young people who want to pursue their studies in this particular line. Because I sitting here, I'm asking myself, but what is it that you will be studying for in order to pursue the environment? I don't have an idea. I wonder now, what about that one who's the matric class, the class of 2009? What is it that do they have career guidance in relation to this particular aviation interest or need? But of course, that also being a drive by the department, going to school and saying that these are the skills that we need. These are the things that young people need to focus on. These are the parts of it that are available. And I think that is the context in which the question is put by one of the members. Because we don't see that happening. The next thing we'll be told that there are no skills and all that. There is an area that you need to pick up as a department to be really proactive in responding to that. And it will be there maybe in the next round, in our next.
I take note, and I think when it comes to the department, we do have programs, but perhaps it's the extent that the programs go down to that may be affecting. With regards to the serving of liquor on board the aircraft, that's a testing question. Normally, the airlines reserve the right to refuse serving liquor to someone they already consider to be intoxicated. It's not a South African problem, it's a global problem. And we let the global part deal with it, but in terms of regulation, there isn't any that limits the state to selling of liquor on board the aircraft. Now, I'm not very familiar with the Liquor Act and how it works, but we can explore looking into it and seeing whether we can have a local solution to selling liquor on board the aircraft. However, we made provision in terms of the behavior, where previously the crew were not in a position to prosecute or lay a charge because of the behavior of the person, unruly behavior, disorderly behavior, they now have the opportunity to charge the person with disorderly behavior to become abrupt and aggressive on board an aircraft. So we can solve the one end in terms of actual behavior, but we haven't got a solution for stopping or limiting the behavior.
Okay. No, thank you very much for the responses. I must confess, Honorable Benson, I was quite ambitious looking at the program of firemen, looking at the national challenges I had thought that we would be able to finalize this piece today. I thought it's a straitjacket piece that is going to be presented to us. But now it has become quite clear that we won't be able to finalize it today. Whether if we do have days to still meet and further engage on this bill, it's something else. Do it. Next week. Okay. No, that's fine then. We will proceed then next week with the deliberation and hopefully to finalize the bill because of the national challenges that we are facing. I would really not want to see a situation where we only have two members available. And the rest being submitting a policy because of the nature of programs now at the national level. Today, the by-election, and obviously these by-elections are a testing ground for what will be happening from or after the State of the Nation address or the response by the President. So that in itself is going to members of parliament, of course, because other of their political parties have been declared that you must be in your respective areas of employment and so forth. And like you would note that even today, the ANC members are here, most of the other opposition members who belong to the select committee are not here. And one would understand that probably it's because they have been given instructions. No more. Over and above that, the human factor, right? Okay, let's not get much into the human factor. Let me leave that. Sister was picked up two things. Sister is the center of the committee. We would want to maybe with the legal office. Has it changed now? Is it parliamentary legal services or is it committee legal assistance services? Out of 2009, there are so many changes that are taking place. Is it still parliamentary legal services?
No, sir. I'm from the Office of Assistance.
State law. What? I'm not
parliamentary.
But that is parliamentary.
There is parliamentary.
Okay. To work on this bill. But they're representing the state. Not parliament. Oh, you are representing parliament.
Not correct, sir.
Okay. No, thank you very much, then, if that is the case. Then, there are two areas that we have proposed as a committee, or that we have picked up as a committee. That we think maybe we might have to propose amendments. One relates to this reference to the Constitution of the Republic of 1993, and then the other one relates to the qualification of the conviction. If a person having been sentenced, caught having stolen a sweet, and sentenced for 3 months, suspended for 5 years, for a year, and so that we then qualify in order to be able not to really disadvantage our people further, or those who are still growing up, because it does not mean that if a child is restricted today, after 5 years, that person will still be in that particular situation. So those are some of the things that we need to look at. And an advisor on how then can we contact that end. So that in our next meeting, say for instance next week, if we have to accept those proposed amendments, then we are able to do that. Okay.
Yeah, also,
the definition
and the issue of the 8 years.
Yes, yeah.
also the long title to include faith on the admission.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think it should be a long meeting as the one we should have.
If you can pick up this thing, have them well structured and ready for our meeting next week. We then just zoom into that, agree, and then we adopt the amendment in the meeting. But yeah, as it is, as it's